This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Prairie Studios on the corner of Trash View and Nada Vista. Please put on your 3D glasses now. We alter your locus ceruleus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves. This keeps your brain at a tasty and toasty 365 degrees Fahrenheit to keep a sin flood of subliminal statism out of your head. And it's working. I can feel it. Can you feel it, Lisa and Brayden?
Yeah.
Woo-hoo. Yeah.
All the way over here.
Right. As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more about this, go to BIPCOT.org.
Worms.
Worms.
Hey, everybody.
So, what's shaking?
Well, not much. I got a huge smile on my face because I'm back on the Fiend after a long absence, so feeling pretty good.
You took a break, too?
I don't remember, like, a couple months since I did a show, something like that. But anyway, it feels good to be back.
Good. Glad you're back. And
yeah, it's great to be here. This is only my third show, but I guess Michael trusts us to be able to do a show without him.
That's right. Yes. We got this. Well,
we got it. We'll be all good, I think.
So anyway, what did you guys want to talk about first?
Well, I kind of want to hear, because Michael brought this up to me earlier, some statist confessions, former statist confessions, because I don't really know either of your personal journeys to liberty yet. So I'm curious to know if you both were really full-on statists before you became, you know, libertarians, or if you were kind of always, if you're born libertarian. So I'm curious.
Well, they say that we're born anarchists, and that subservience to purported authorities is a learned behavior, but I'm sure there was a time when I was not an anarchist, and you have to go way, way back, probably back to the mid-90s. I was a young Republican, neoconservative, war hawk type. Mm. And I think my status confession is that I used to say things like, turn it into a parking lot or turn it into glass.
Ooh.
And we've all probably, <That's harsh. laughs> we've probably, you know, we've come a long way.
For shame.
You know. Yeah.
Oh, I'm only teasing.
So how did you get to where you are now? Was it like an overnight thing, or was it a gradual?
It was not really an overnight thing. I guess back in the mid-90s, being like a Republican and a neoconservative, I originally supported the first George Bush, but I was too young to vote for him. And then by time like 1998 came around, I think I was listening to I actually listened to the GCN radio network back in the day, but I used to listen to Alex Jones before he was even on the GCN network. He used to have a show out of Austin, and even when he was still on only in Austin, he also streamed on the internet, and I was one of his early internet listeners.
Wow, I didn't even know that he was, you know, around that long ago. I have some friends who used to work with him, but on the website, not, you know. Well, they did some reporting on scene for him too, but I don't know a whole lot about the other things that he's done. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it is. And so back in 2008, Alex Jones supported Ron Paul, and he got a lot of his listeners into the Ron Paul movement. And I actually joined the Ron Paul movement back then, and I was a delegate for Ron Paul in 2008, and I got to meet him in 2008 and again in 2012. Ron Paul's a really great guy.
I don't write him off either, like a lot of people.
Let's hear more about Ron Paul.
So Ron Paul got me into libertarianism, the philosophy. I was actually a member of the Libertarian Party as early as 2004, but I was still kind of a mini statist and believed we needed government for the really important things, you know. But once Ron Paul led me to consistent libertarianism, it wasn't that long before I found voluntarism. And I used to be in economics, and so I started reading some of the stuff that Ron Paul read. He used to read Rothbard and Mises and things like that. So I started there, and I ended up on Mises.org. And it was all downhill from there once I started reading Rothbard and then Spooner and so forth.
Yes.
And here I am.
Welcome to the dark side.
Thanks.
There's no turning back. I actually never really read any of that. I've read some Spooner, but I didn't read any of that until I was already kind of into this and had a network of friends who were referring to it, and I wanted to see what they were referencing. But what happened with me was I've already shared my story, so I'll just be brief. I had a neighbor who, back in probably 2001, was really into politics, Republican, and he asked me where I stood politically, and I said, I really don't, you know, I just... I think the government should just butt out and leave everybody alone and let them live their lives. And he said, oh, you're a libertarian then. And I said, what is that? I'd never heard of it. And I said, okay. I kind of identified as independent before that. And I said, well, okay. So I started reading about libertarianism. And then in 2004, I voted libertarian. And that's the last time I voted. After that, I just thought this is all kind of a charade. And the LP candidates to me in 2008 and then 2012 weren't really my ideal libertarian. So no more voting for me. And then 2012 is when I went, you know, just completely took the leap into anarchism and voluntarism.
Cool.
What about
That's
you,
about a year ahead Brady? Of me, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. I really don't remember my whole story, so I might be making up.
You do live in Colorado, so you're excused.
Well, there you go. So let's just assume I'm making up like half of this as I go along. But I don't know. I was always like super independent and did not like authority and all that sort of typical anarchist sort of stuff. Then I remember like in high school, I was at a fair or something and took the world's smallest political quiz and scored like the most libertarian that you possibly can. So I always, but like I wouldn't have called myself a libertarian or like I didn't join the LP party. So I don't know, for me, one of the big stumbling blocks or whatever was I would say things like there's just some problems that are too big to solve without government, basically, or something like a government. Like, you know, there's just like, I know this is cliche, but roads, it's just too big of an issue, or, you know, armies or, you know, whatever the big issue was. Yeah. And so let's see what ended up happening. I don't know. I drifted further and further away from all that. And, I don't know, somehow I stumbled on a bunch of podcasts and they were like, yeah, you know, you don't need really government to do roads. And I started learning more and more about that. And, I wasn't a minarchist or for anything for very long, like a lot of people are. They have like a transition phase. I just kind of went from not really paying attention too much to like, oh, well, yeah, it would be immoral to tell other people what to do and use violence to enforce that. So I guess that makes me an anarchist now. So,
well, welcome to the club.
Very good. Yeah. The dark side, as you said earlier. We have cookies, I say.
Right.
Well, I don't have cookies because I'm not eating sugar right now. But that's the whole... It's
Worms.
Amazing I'm sitting in this chair functioning.
I've been trying super hard to eat less sugar for the past, I don't know, this whole year. So it's tough for me.
Yeah, makes me a little grouchy sometimes. It's okay.
Yep.
We'll survive. People, thankfully, I don't work with, you know, people around me.
If I can live without the state, I can live without sugar. So I'll make it.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, there you go. So are there things that either of you said often when, you know, before you were full on liberty minded that now you think about and you're like, oh, what was I thinking?
Makes you cringe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My cringeworthy statements were back when I was a, you know, neoconservative war hawk, were things like turn it into a parking lot or turn it into glass. And those
kind
of things
imagine
actually
you saying
make me cringe
that.
Now. Yeah,
I
those
can't.
Kind of things trigger me now.
Yeah, knowing you like I do, I can't.
For sure.
It's funny, though. I mean, it gives you hope. You know, it shows you that people can change. So even the ones in the most extreme views, you know, in the opposite direction can change.
Absolutely.
Except for parents, because they're kind of set in their ways. I mentioned before the election, I was at my parents' house having like a barbecue or whatever, and, you know, election came up. And they're both conservatives. They're not really big fans of Trump, but they vote party, you know, consistently. And so it came up, and I dared to say, what if we just didn't have a president? And everybody looked at me like I had three heads. So that conversation got shut down pretty quickly. That was it. Like, let's talk about something else. It's always me.
They could sense the tension, huh? So.
Yeah. I always say the thing and everybody's, something's wrong with her. Did she hit her head when she was little?
All three of them?
Yeah, all three of them. And I have kids. They're 17 and 24. And they're like, oh, Mom, stop. It's so embarrassing. Yeah. Talk about it. My son says, you sound like one of those edgy teenagers that lives in their mom's basement. And I'm like, how do you even know about that? How does he even know about those people?
Coming from him, that's awesome.
Yeah. Well, he's, you know, quite snarky. I don't have any idea where he gets that from. I don't know.
Yeah. It's very mysterious.
Wink, wink. No clue. No idea.
Lisa, do you have something you used to say all the time? That
I really can't think of anything. I've been trying to think of something. Yeah, I'm kind of struggling too. Yeah, I don't really. I just remember always saying things like, you know, it's someone's business if somebody puts their body in, as long as you're hurting other people. Right. That was just always my.
Ooh, I just thought of one for me, but
we're going to have to pick that up when we come back for this trip to the market.
There we go.
Worms.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
You were gonna tell us. Yeah.
So we were, before the break, we were talking about, you know, things we used to say when we were statists, before we took the red pill, you know, all those sorts of good things. So I don't know, one of my things that I cringe at hearing now when other people say it, or the thought of me saying it in the past, is college should be free. Housing should be free. Travel should be free. Like all the, I had some kind of vision in my head where like I've seen too much Star Trek where there's just no money and you know, you just do things. You don't need money for things. And since I was dirt poor and, you know, not doing great in life, like these sort of ideas appealed to me at the time. So yeah, I cringe at that now, thinking about that. And I'm trying to figure out what happened to make me sort of change my mind, like why shouldn't college be free? And the best I can come up with is, you know, basically you end up eventually running out of other people's money to do all that sort of thing. And smarter people than me are the ones who've said that in the past. But so yeah, you end up eventually running out of other people's money. That would be a really good counter argument itself. And also, I don't know, at some point I sort of grew up and like got a job and started making my own money and was not dirt poor any longer. And then slowly it started dawning on me like how much of my paycheck was going to taxes and everything else. You know, it's like upwards of 40%. So you look at the numbers and you're like, wow, it's not really right that other people should be taking my money like this. And so then I would like think about my past self and like, yeah, if college was free, someone has to pay for it. It would be someone like me paying for someone else's college. And that's fine if it was a voluntary system, but to forcibly do that to someone else, definitely no bueno. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know why that's such a hard concept. Like, I understand that some people don't think of that, you know, on their own. But once you point it out to somebody and say, well, wait a minute, you know, if you want things to be free, somebody has to pay for it. Who do you want to pay for it?
Right.
And they'll say, whoa, you know, the rich. And I'm like, oh, why do you think they should pay for it for you? Well, because the social contract. And I'm like, wait a minute, what? You know, and that's when I start talking about Spooner now. But I don't, to me, once you introduce that topic, I don't understand why people don't pick it up right away. If they've never heard it before and you introduce it, I can see why somebody might have to think about it for a few minutes. But people will still, you know, they'll still argue with you about it. No, it's you owe it to society.
Right.
What? No. And like you said, voluntarily, you know, people are, I wrote an article about this last year, how charitable people really are. Like every year in the U.S., people donate more and more money voluntarily. So they would do that, I think, the people who wanted to and can would do that. And also, you know, if people were taxed less, they'd have more disposable income and they would be able to go to school. They would be able to afford it. Plus, see, the college is one thing that my family, they actually agree with me on this because, you know, conservative leanings. But once I get started on why college is so expensive, you know, because of government subsidizing it.
So they agree with that part. Okay.
Yeah, some people start to get that. It's usually Democrats that get, no, it should be free. Everybody should get education. And I'm like, well, sure. No, and then you have to kind of start at the bottom with that one. Like, why?
Yep. You know, it all comes from, like, good intentions. So, you know, it'd be great if everyone had, like, world-class education and, like, could think for themselves. Like, how great would the world be? Like, I'm for that too, but the way to accomplish it is where, you know, people like us might differ from Democrats or whoever else that would want college to be free. So,
Would you say the beginning of the end of your statism was when you learned economics? In a nutshell?
Like, no, but that was certainly like another huge push in that direction. I was already well on the way, and it wasn't like, I almost want, like, I've never studied economics, so I've never read Rothbard or Mises, so I only have a very cursory knowledge of economics, but the little bit of economics I did learn, like, oh my goodness, they're taking 40% of everything I earn, like, just that level of economics was enough for me to kind of get my head around that part of it.
And now you know that taxation is theft.
Now we know.
Yep. What's funny is I used to tell my daughter's at 24, and so when she started working a few years ago, when she got her first job, she got her first paycheck, and she saw all the taxes that were taken out. And I think that you can educate people about it, but when it happens to them, it's real.
Yes.
And so she said, oh my gosh, I can't believe how much money they took. And I said, yeah, you know, I told you, I warned you that was going to happen and to plan for that. And she said, yeah, but I'm a student and I'm so young, I didn't think they'd take this money.
Someone's wrong on the internet.
And we're back.
Cool. Yeah. Totally back.
So before the break, we were talking about things that we said back when we were statists, if we were statists. And I know that I said things like turn it into a parking lot. And and you guys had things that you said too back when we were statists. And if only there was a way to tell, like a test, that we could tell really easily whether someone was a statist or a libertarian.
I'm intrigued, and I wish to subscribe to your newsletter. Do go
me
on.
Me too. Sign me up.
Which segues into our next article, which is by the Libertarian Institute. Will Griggs' Tom Joad test is the name of the article.
Yeah.
Cool. What is
basically,
this test?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Am I stepping on your toes?
Basically, this article is about basically police brutality. And the author of the article goes on to explain that he came up with a thought experiment that can reveal someone's leanings. And it's based on those who are witness to acts of police brutality, whether they are, you know, beating someone or shooting someone.
Right.
And he pointed out that there's substantial merit in Joad's pledge to sympathize with those who are victims of power, exemplified by Joad's famous statement that wherever there's a cop beating up a guy, I'll be there. And so he formulated this test that says, in assessing any act of police violence, I believe it's wise to apply what I've called the Tom Joad test. When you see a police officer beating or shooting a citizen, it is your first impulse to sympathize with the uniformed assailant or the victim. If the former is the case, then you're a natural authoritarian. If the latter is true, you're an instinctive libertarian.
Interesting.
This is so interesting to me, and I want to save this article and this test as a reference point because I think he's right. You can really figure out where someone stands right away because ideally, I think in any situation, and not just with things involving the state or police, any situation really would be ideal for a person to sit back and get all the facts and gather all the information before making a judgment. But we don't do that. People generally don't do see that. And people generally, especially in cases like this, and I guess because, you know, the indoctrination, you know, obey authority and they're never wrong, works when we're younger on most of us. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to collectivize, but I think you know what I'm getting at. But yeah, we're taught, I mean, it took me until probably about 2012 to really understand that, hey, you know what? These are humans, and they're, just because someone's in a position of authority doesn't mean they're automatically right. And in fact, often they're wrong. Mm-hmm. And then the more that I went down that rabbit hole and learned, the more I saw they really are often wrong and abuse that power. You know, and then it's all downhill from there. then you don't have faith in anything. And then you start to see it the opposite way. And then when you hear about something like this happening, you automatically think that, or you might automatically think the law enforcement agent is wrong. And I've even had to stop and say, like, okay, well, who initiated the violence? Who started this? And
exactly.
Yeah. Sure. So,
as Danilo says, you know, who's the aggressor?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you have to go pretty deep with that sometimes, because somebody might say, well, this police officer pulled this person over for speeding and the person, you know, attacked them or started arguing with them. And I'm like, well, wait a minute, pulled them over for speeding, victimless crime, you know, and then you can go down that hole. Rabbit hole too. And unless people are really open and willing to listen, people who don't already understand these concepts, you know, that can get pretty, those discussions can get pretty heated.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Worms.
Worms.
Worms. I think I've been so programmed by society or whatever did the programming to me. I think my first reaction would still be that the cop is doing the right thing. Like if I was taking this test, my first instinct, I think, would be the cop. But, you know, probably shortly thereafter, the second order thinking would kick in and I'd be like, well, you know, maybe the cop's wrong. But I do think my first instinct would be not something I'm comfortable with.
Well, I mean, that's understandable. Look, how many years of that was probably ingrained into you? I mean, we're just, all of the propaganda that's around us, the news, everything. I mean, we're just taught that authority is right and that, you know, why would this person who's in a position of power do something intentionally or maybe not intentionally? Mm-hmm. It's, they're also indoctrinated or programmed.
Right. But the default is that they're in the right in my head, which doesn't mean it's true.
Right. Well, you know, you're human. And for me, I come from a really unique and kind of biased position in favor of, you know, the victim, because I work in alternative media and I've been reading about the worst of the worst, as I mentioned earlier tonight. And so I've been writing about police brutality cases for, I don't know, 5 years now. So I see a lot of it. So I'm kind of biased that way. You know, for me, it's, uh-oh, here's another bad cop. Sure, when that might not always be the case, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I used to actually identify, I guess, with the cop in a lot of those situations back when I was a statist. Uh-huh. But then I think right around the time that I became an anarchist and started to re-examine all of this stuff, you know, I would see police brutality videos and it would have a different effect on me. And now to the point where today I don't even share them anymore because they kind of, you know, propagate that, you know, negative, you know, feeling. But it is kind of powerful how one, you know, can witness an event like that and it can have that kind of effect on them. So, yeah, I mean, just seeing one, if you see one police brutality video, you've pretty much seen them all, even though, like, I don't want to discount any one specific, you know, situation. But after a while, the experience of watching such a thing kind of becomes the same. And I kind of have become sensitive to those kind of things and I don't really watch them all the time anymore.
Yeah, I avoid them as much as possible now. It used to be, I used to share a lot of that on social media, and I don't anymore for the same reason. I think people get it. They know it's out there. I don't want to, I don't know, the real world is already depressing enough. Do I really need, like, we get it. We know this is a problem. And I don't know if it's a problem that's ever going to get better. You know, in my dream world, it would, but.
And it's a problem that's always been there, and I wonder if I just was seeing more of it, or if it was because I was looking for it. You know, was it happening more often, or was I just finding what I was looking for when I was like sharing all those videos and looking for more of those videos? So I noticed that the more I focused on it, the more it seemed to happen.
Yeah, there's that too. That's
I can relate to that for sure.
This case in particular, though, that's referenced in this article is really sad. I actually didn't know much about this case until tonight, when I read this article about the 15-year-old being shot. Jordan Edwards, this is particularly disturbing because he and his friends were driving away from a party and the police shot at the car they were in.
Oh my gosh.
Why is that necessary? It's not necessary, obviously.
Does not seem necessary.
Yeah, so this is a case where I would hope that most people would say, okay, you know, police supporter or not, this is wrong. This is really wrong. This is a kid who was just leaving a party, which he had every right to do. He wasn't under arrest or being detained. There was no reason he couldn't leave. So the police officer who shot and killed him has apparently been charged with murder.
Oh, wow.
And in the past, what I did some digging, was ordered to anger management. He has a history of having outburst and not complying with rules at work and ethics codes and things. So the problem with some of these people is they'll have, just like with anybody else, they'll have a history of problems that kind of get brushed under the rug, and then something really bad happens, and it's like that hindsight bias, I guess. Oh,
yeah,
we should have known, I guess. This guy was kind of a scary fella and was really aggressive before, and, you know, we didn't think he was going to kill someone. Oh,
sure.
Well, okay, maybe you should have considered somebody with an anger problem might hurt somebody someday.
Worms.
The part that really disturbs me about this article is the statistics they list for how many fatal shootings have occurred in 2016 and, like, the current run for 2017. And it depends who you ask, apparently. So different sources cite different numbers. But, like, just in this year, it's saying so far in 2017, 352 people shot and killed by police, according to the Washington Post. And that is an incredible number to me. Like, just, I can't really wrap my head around that. Does that shock you guys in the same way, or is that just normal?
It would have a few years ago, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but a few years ago it would have with me, too. Now I'm just
But you've read
usual.
These statistics before, so you're used to those numbers.
Yeah, I'm getting desensitized to those numbers.
Man, that's something, isn't it? I spent a summer in Norway once, about 10 years ago, and their police aren't not allowed to carry guns at all. So they have this, like, lockbox in the trunk and with a gun in it. And so if they ever get in a situation where they might need a gun, they have to, like, radio back to base and, like, ask for permission to pull the gun out of the trunk. And it's not loaded, so they have to, like, load it. And it's this whole big deal. And I don't know if that's the right answer.
Phone.
If that's the right answer, but it seems maybe.
Sorry, I'm getting.
Sorry, I'm getting a terrible,
terrible
echo
all of a sudden.
Anyway, maybe the police in Norway are doing something right. Killing their citizens. So yeah. Anyway, the cops in Norway don't kill everyone. What do you guys think about that?
I think that's a pretty good idea.
I think so too.
How about let's not shoot people?
Worms.
Right? Worms.
Sounds like a plan.
Listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
And we're back.
Freedom Fiends.
Yeah, so we were talking about this test that you can use to see how authoritarian your friends and family are. No, not really. That's not nice. I mean, you could, but
fun for the holidays.
Yeah. Great idea for holiday dinners with the entire extended family.
Great idea. Yeah.
Yeah, or when you're meeting somebody's parents for the first time. Mm-hmm. And sure, you'll never get invited over for dinner again. No. No, really. So this story reminded me of this. I was just thinking about this other story because, just, I don't know, overall craziness, but this police officer who was confiscating drugs from people and then selling them back on the streets, and then saying that he was influenced by a certain entity.
Oh boy.
He claimed that Satan made him do it. But in his video where he's talking about this and confessing, he kind of blames Satan, and then he doesn't. He says, it wasn't anybody's fault but my own, but it was Satan.
Right.
Satan made me do this. Did you guys hear about this?
I did, yeah.
My goodness. I'm sad to say I did.
So what is your assessment? What are your assessments of this story?
It's all you, Shane.
Well, I thought it was odd that when he said he had a relationship with Satan, right?
Oh, boy.
I couldn't help but think that, well, if by Satan you mean the state, then yeah.
Oh, man.
I thought similar things. I thought, well, I mean, you have a point there, but... To put it out there so openly, gotta give him some credit for that, huh?
Yeah, right. I don't know if your two affiliations, but some forms of Christianity, like Satan is real and he's like here and now, he's influencing you, and like they tend to talk about him like he's, you know, just a guy. So every time I hear someone talking about like, oh, well, you know, Satan made me sell those drugs that I confiscated as a police officer, it's kind of like, whoa, you know, shocking.
Yeah,
to me.
Yeah, I try
but
to visualize in,
like,
that.
Like in their world, Satan is like, yeah, it's no big deal. Satan made me do it, you know.
Right. I was thinking, okay, did he mean, you know, metaphorically? Or like, what did he mean literally? What does this guy mean?
Because usually they mean it literally, in my experience.
I think he does mean it literally.
Yeah, let me quote him here. It says, quote, I made that decision based on Satan playing games with me. So end the quote there. But like, that's sort of their mentality. Like, Satan can influence your mind, even though you're the one who ultimately makes the decision. So I'm not quite sure how it works, but...
I don't know. Yeah, I kind of... That was pretty alarming for me to read, because it's one thing to think that way, and it's another to openly admit that in a video that everybody can see. It's, it's pretty bold. Give him credit for that. But I don't know if he thinks this is, you know, an excuse. I kind of got that feeling from the video where he's talking about this, where he kind of thought, this is, you know, people are going to feel sorry for me and they're going to understand. Oh. And yeah,
I kind of get the feeling that he might be one of those people that never takes the blame for anything. And Satan kind of is like the ultimate scapegoat for him.
Yeah, I can see that too. It's, you know, and this isn't the first time that I've heard about a police officer recently, even.
Sure.
Confiscating drugs and then turning around and selling them on the street, mm-hmm. and making pretty good money off of that.
There's a documentary series on BBC called Ideal that's all about that, where the cop confiscates drugs and sells them. It's a great show. Everyone should watch it.
It's a documentary? It's not fiction? Like
I'm joking. It's totally fiction.
Oh!
But it's
sort of
a
like
great...
Idiocracy is a documentary.
Yes, exactly.
Video, yeah.
No, I'm just being silly. But it's a good show.
I might have to check that out. Although, this is one of those situations where, you know, do I want to watch a show that's fictional about something that's really happening when I'm reading this in the news every day anyway? Yeah, and I thought the guy in the video, too, kind of played the martyr act. You know, poor me, Satan set me up.
Boy, life must be easy if you can blame other people for your problems.
Yeah. That's one thing that I really admire in people, when they can, no matter how bad something is, they can take ownership of it and admit that they're the ones, you know, that it was their fault. And for a little while, in the beginning of this video, I thought, oh, okay, this guy's kind of taking ownership. And then this Satan line came out, and I was like, whoa, wait, what? Well, after rewinding this, did he say that?
Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibFair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. As always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by the BIPCOT No Government License. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more about this, go to BIPCOT.org.
we're back.
Get this. I have this weird story that I have to tell you guys about. And you might have heard about it. I don't know. I actually came across this on the Associated Press of all places and was like, whoa, this is weird. And it turns out they have an oddities section on their website. So you can find the weird news. I love weird news. So this is... I thought this was a fun story, but I'm sure you'll have some interesting opinions on it. So my headline is, man arrested for drawing and buying people's blood in an apartment in D.C. Did you hear about this story?
Oh, I heard about it, but I haven't read it.
No.
Yeah, so this man was, he had this blood collecting operation going on in an apartment building in D.C., not in a very good part of the city. He was working out of an abandoned apartment, and he had an assistant who was helping him. And what he was doing was paying people $30, and he would draw samples of their blood and keep them. And so all these people were congregating outside of the building, and it's an area where apparently, you know, there's a lot of drugs. So police were kind of like, hey, what's going on over here? And then somebody called the police and said, you know, there's something sketchy going on over here. You guys need to come check this out. And when they searched the apartment, they found large quantities of blood in storage, apparently improperly stored, whatever that means, along with a lot of used needles, vials, and a ledger with a bunch of names on it. So he at the time had drawn at least like 230 people's blood there. So there was the interviews were so, I found some, you know, they interviewed bystanders on the news and some people who actually, you know, went and let this guy take their blood. And, you know, the news reporter was asking, you know, what was the guy using the blood for? And they're like, we don't know. It was $30. We don't ask questions. We don't care. We wanted the money. And I'm thinking, oh my gosh, this is a way to spread, you know, hepatitis or whatever around DC. And apparently a lot of the people were already known to police because they were drug users. So I'm thinking this is just a recipe for biological disaster. But the guy claimed that he was working for a company, you know, like a blood collection company, but apparently it's, he didn't have any documentation and it was not a real company. So he was charged for practicing as a registered nurse without a license, but what he was going to do with the blood was never revealed. Oh, so,
a couple of wild questions. Wild speculation. Yeah.
So one, some people are saying, wait a minute, why is that illegal? You should be able to sell your blood to whoever you want, which I agree with. It's your body, you know, free market, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
So there's that. But on the other hand, I felt bad for some of these people they interviewed because they didn't seem to understand that this was very risky. Like the guy, like there were needles laying around all over. Apparently it wasn't sanitary conditions at all. So what do you think about this?
Yeah, I don't know. When it comes to that sort of thing, you would think that informed consent should be a given, that, you know, that's not safe, but it should be explained to them beforehand anyway, just in case.
Yeah.
So 230 names in the ledger times $30. That's like $7,000. That guy was dedicated to his craft.
Yeah, you know? I'm wondering what he... I'm so curious. I want to know what he was going to use the blood for.
Was his name Lestat? Some other famous vampire? Like,
He was wearing a black cape.
Was he counting really slowly?
And you weren't allowed to wear crosses or have garlic in the building. No, I don't know. I'm so curious. I'm hoping more comes out about this story.
I hope
I want to know what he was going to use it for. We could speculate all day. Like,
so Lisa, please speculate now. What is the number one choice that he would do with that blood?
I hope not. I hope he wasn't going to drink it. I mean, I thought maybe he had some kind of, maybe he's going to sell it to somebody overseas. I don't, I really don't know.
Yeah, maybe I first thought he would collect it and sell it to someone else. Yeah.
Yeah, like Fort Detrick or Plum Island or something.
I mean, it is in the D.C. area, so who knows? Right. But what's fun about these kind of stories is I wrote this article for work, and then I like to just kind of leave things hanging and see what people say. And some of the comments are great. And people are like, oh, it's a new world order, and it's they're going to sacrifice, and they're going to have one of those blood rituals, and he's a vampire. It's got to be that. And then, you know, then there's the whole theory that, oh, they're going to drink it, you know, sell it to the elite, you know, so yeah, the wealthy people, Illuminati. So they can stay young forever. Yeah.
I'm going to go with number one. It was something sexy he was going to do with it. Second option. I forgot my section option, so moving on.
DC is such a weird place anyway. I mean, even it's, you know, back before I really was aware of you know, things government does, I didn't really think much of the city. I would just, because it is pretty in some parts and there's a lot of neat things to see, a lot of good museums. But I would walk around and think, I didn't pay attention to the writing on the buildings. And now when you do, when you go and you have more knowledge and you see the like cryptic quotes and things that are engraved on buildings, you're like, whoa, what does this mean? You know, your mind starts to go. Yeah. Right. So then you hear a story like this. You're like, whoa, weird stuff's happening.
He's going to take it to the temple to Abraham Lincoln.
Creepy. Yeah, something.
He's probably trying to make a new bird flu in his bathtub.
Yeah. Oh, maybe. Oh, that's such a scary thing to think about. I need to move out to the country as soon as possible and get away from here.
Lots of open land out here in the West.
Yep. Yeah. My best friend is a prepper, and she's a well-known writer, and she always tells me, why do you live, you know, if something happens, you live way too close to DC. And I'm like,
yeah,
just let me live here in blissful ignorance, okay?
Right.
Oh boy.
Yeah, you don't want to live in a big city when something like that happens, because if you've ever seen The Walking Dead, you know how hard it was for them to get out of there.
You know what? I have a confession. I don't watch that show.
Say it isn't so.
Wynoa, there's a show that you and Michael have been talking about lately that I don't watch, but I've been meaning to start.
Oh, Bloodline.
Yeah.
Speaking of blood,
yeah. It's not actually about blood. That's a really good show. It's
Should we watch that as homework so we can follow along with you and Michael?
You should. There are 3 seasons, so I think there's a total of probably like 30 episodes. Yeah, but you'll like it. You'll get really, it's very well done. You'll get really sucked in and you won't be able to stop watching. You'll binge watch it. Like, I'm not joking when I say that last Saturday, I watched Netflix for 18 hours straight.
Wow.
Last weekend. Not just Saturday, like Saturday and Sunday. I didn't do anything else. Yeah, because I watched that and then I watched The Keepers. The show about the missing nun in Baltimore back in 1969. It's a documentary. That actually is a documentary, and it's very chilling. I recommend that one, too. Unsolved mystery. But Bloodline, cool. Yeah, that's about a family with a lot of secrets and, you know, betrayal, and it's interesting. But the last few episodes were really weird. So you guys have to watch them before I say more, because I don't want to spoil.
Okay.
Right, plus, we might have listeners who watch, and I don't want to spoil.
Oh, yeah.
Fair enough.
But yeah, check it out.
Writing it down.
I remember listening to the show in the past when you guys would talk about shows like Breaking Bad. And so I did go and binge watch that. It was great. Mm-hmm. And then Better Call Saul.
Oh, yeah. I watched that one. I watched Breaking Bad, too. I like to wait until shows are a couple of seasons in normally before I start watching them, because then I can just binge watch. You don't have to wait. So now when I start watching a show or I get caught up and there's another season coming, I'm like spoiled. I'm like, man, I got to wait a week, like Better Call Saul. I'm like, I got to wait a week until the next.
Oh, yeah.
That's the hard part. But I want to know what happens with Chuck. And yeah.
Having to wait a whole week, or even having to wait till the beginning of the next season.
Oh, that's terrible.
That's tough. That's really hard, because some of the seasons are spaced out, you know, in a year, and Netflix tends to put the whole season out on the same day. Mm-hmm. So you can binge watch, and you watch a whole, like, 10 episodes in 2 days, and then you're like, oh, I gotta wait a year.
I need more.
Yeah. I gotta wait a year until the next. I didn't think this through properly. I should have paced myself.
Yeah. You know what I think's funny is, like, it seems like most people like to binge watch these really good TV shows, but, you know, before Netflix or whatever in the past, there was no way to really do that. So it's just funny funny that the way most people like to consume TV is not how it was ever available in the past. So
yeah,
I don't know how they missed the boat on that concept, but I'm glad they figured it out eventually.
Me too. I'm so spoiled now. Yeah. I don't watch much TV, but when I do, it's like a marathon.
You
like,
go for the 18 hour.
Yeah, I'm like, you know what? Let me just clear my schedule for the next 2 days. I'm just gonna sit here. Yeah. And catch up and, you know, whoops, oh, it's been 18 hours. I'm surprised I didn't become one with my couch. Like, melted into it like a slug. I don't know. It's bad.
You guys remember on The Simpsons, Homer had, like, his groove in the couch that he had worn into it?
I probably have that. That's embarrassing. I'm not going to look. That's embarrassing.
Yeah, don't look.
About.
No one at home, no one, go and look right now. Please do not do that.
Everyone's checking and falling into a depression now, realizing how much they... Yeah, I like to think that I balance out watching things for fun and watching things that are educational. Mm-hmm. At least what I tell myself. I've watched all the documentaries already, so what else am I supposed to do?
Read a book, take a walk, paint a picture.
I read like crazy.
Oh, good.
I read a lot, yeah. In fact, I'm reading a book right now that I was going to mention, and I guess I'm going to mention it.
Ooh,
it's called You Are Not So Smart. Yeah, and the guy who wrote it has a website with the same name, You Are Not So Smart. And he mostly talks about...
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
The book is about, it's called You Are Not So Smart, and it's about cognitive failures that humans have. And the gist of it is that we all, you know, we all think we're really smart and that we're logical and rational and we don't make any errors, but we do more than we realize. So I just started reading it, but I know that he talks about things like confirmation bias and cognitive dissonance and the backfire effect and all, you know, the things that we are all guilty of sometimes, some of us more than others.
Yeah. What are you trying to say?
I like to think that liberty-minded people tend to be more logically consistent than people who are really, you know, into statism.
I have not found that
could
be
biased. No, I'm biased, probably.
I hate to admit it, but, you know, people are people. We all suffer from these mental mistakes.
Yeah, that's definitely true. You know,
that's true, especially cognitive dissonance. I know it's something I used to have a lot of, and I probably still have a little of, but it's a lot less.
Like around the state?
Oh,
or
yeah, especially.
Government or...
Yeah, I try to view every situation or issue separately, and I try not to have bias. But I mean, some of it apparently, in this book, he's going to explain. I haven't gotten to that yet. That, you know, it happens and we're not aware of it. It's kind of sometimes beyond our awareness. So I'm hoping, you know, to improve that because I don't want to be that person who people listen to or read my work and think, "Man, this girl."
Right.
No, what she's talking about. She's crazy.
Interesting. Oh, go ahead, Shane.
Yeah.
No, go ahead. What's the name of that book again?
You Are Not So Smart. And he has a website with the same title. He's very witty and clever. I've been reading his website for a long time. And then I came across the book a couple weeks ago. And it was in my queue. And I finally got to it a couple days ago.
In my experience, it's really hard to like notice those things about yourself, especially like in the moment. But it's way easier to like spot somebody else's fallacy while they're talking or reading their work or something like that. So I don't know. Is that true for you too, Lisa?
Like, yeah, that's true. And I like it when people point it out to me, even though sometimes initially I might think that they're wrong. I'm like, no, they're wrong. But I try to step back and think about it, or maybe I'll think about it that night and the next day come back and think, oh man, you know what? they were right. But that's how we learn and improve. And I don't want to be one of those people where people yes me. I want to be sometimes put in my place and told, you're way off on this.
Right. The same is true for me, too. And in my first year as an anarchist, I debated a lot of things that I was wrong about. And I'm glad that I was wrong about them because people showed me, you know, that I could think outside the box, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I learned a lot from being wrong.
Worms.
That's one benefit of social media I've found, that, you know, when you have a big circle of friends who, you know, are like-minded but might diverge a little bit on certain topics, then, like, one that I try to be open-minded about is borders, because even among libertarians, there's a lot of controversy there and a lot of disagreement. So I try to be open-minded and listen to other people's perspectives on it, even when I strongly disagree. So that's one where I don't shut down a discussion, even though I'm in my head, sometimes I might be like, no, this person is wrong.
Well, the store's closed down years ago, so what are they arguing about?
Unfortunate, isn't
that's a
it?
Terrible
I'm
joke.
So sad when bookshears, but I'm so sad when bookstores close. It's just a horrible thing. I still like to hold a book in my hands, though. I don't really like the digital. That, like, there's the digital is immediate. You know, you can just log online and, like, buy a book and download it, and you can read it in a few minutes. So I like that. But that's also bad because impulse buy. I think I'm going to buy 6 books tonight. And then you next thing you know, you've got this huge queue of books. And I'm one of those people who will be reading 6 books at a time.
I used to do that. Now I only read them, like, 1 at a time.
I'm hearing that music.
Yep.
Right on.
We'll be back after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
And we're back.
We're back. And we were talking about how none of us are really that smart, and we're not as smart as we think we are. And the reason I was thinking about that was, well, several things, but one was today I was debating some people online about a topic that I'm not even going to get into. But I came across this, I was reading about logical fallacies, and there's a debate tactic that a lot of people use, and I did not know there was a name for this until today, but it's the Gish Gallop, and this is where you just dump a lot of points on a person that you're disagreeing with, and a lot of them might be completely wrong or off topic or irrelevant, but the idea is that you just dump so much information on a person that they can't really, it's frustrating for them to go through all of it. Brayden, you said you've heard of this before.
I have, actually.
This was new to me.
So I guess I heard of it. I guess there's a guy named Dwayne Gish who used to debate on the topic of evolution.
And
so he would be debating a scientist or something like that. And, you know, when it was his turn to speak, he would just make point after point after point and just fill, you know, his whole time with like an overwhelming amount of falsities that would take, you know, basically hours for the scientist to try to counter. Because it's faster to make a statement that's wrong than it is to explain why that statement's wrong. So that's the debate tactic. You just kind of flood the other team with way too much to counter.
So I guess it's a tactic they use. I wonder if people always intentionally do this, if they know. Right, because I think some of them might just be anxious to get all their information out there, or they just think, you know, this. Plus, I think if they're talking points that a person has used over and over again, then, or if it's kind of like among certain circles, there are certain points that people will bring up.
Sure.
And they kind of have them memorized, and they just dump them all on you at once, and it's like, oh, I don't have time to break down these 50 things that you just listed and go through them one by one. I'm not that patient.
I hear you.
If they're going to link me a YouTube video, it has to be like 2 minutes or less, or I might not watch it.
Right? I don't think any of us have really long attention spans anymore. I know I don't. Like, I used to. I used to be able to sit down and focus on one thing for hours. My mom used to say a bomb could go off and you would not hear it. But now, because, since the internet, it's so easily distracted. You have 50 tabs open on your browser and like... Yep. Let me click on this link. I want to read about this next, and you're all over the place, and that's not good, I don't think.
Well, Liberty people, I've seen do this tactic as well, so we're not immune from it either. I doubt they were doing it on purpose, but they would say things like, you know, taxes theft, and the state is based on violence, and, you know, sort of all these concepts that maybe to someone like us is maybe common knowledge, but to someone else, it's just way overwhelming, and, like, they can't unpack the ideas fast enough.
So. Right. I have a way of trying to reduce things down to, like, simple one-liners for people, like, to kind of plant that seed of thought, and sometimes I overdo it, you know, when it comes to like taxation and theft and stuff. And I've been accused of just throwing out contrived platitudes. And it's not necessarily the case. These things, you know, have had a lot of thought gone into them, and I've boiled it down, you know, over at least 6 months before I came to the conclusion that, yeah, taxation is theft.
Sure. But, yeah. Do you have like another good example? Because now I'm curious.
Voting is violence. That was one that I didn't get right away when I first heard it. And it bounces off a lot of people before it sticks, because they don't really see the connect between voting and violence, you know, like the initiation of force and whatnot.
Sure.
Yeah, what happened with me with taxation is theft was back around 2012 when I was kind of starting to realize, like, wait a minute, I don't really, you know, I was really ditching statism, like a little bit that I had, that big L libertarian that was left in me. And somebody, this was before I had a big circle of libertarian friends on social media. And one person who I kind of got involved in a discussion with on a friend's wall added me as a friend, and he was sharing all these memes about taxation as theft, and it took a repetition for me. And I kept seeing them, and I was like, what is this? What are they talking about? And at first I kind of rejected the idea, and then I started thinking about it more, and then it clicked. It's like, oh yeah, I get it. So I try to remember that too when I'm talking to people who don't know what I'm talking about or think I'm out there. Like, wait a minute, let me stop and back up a little.
Yeah, sometimes you have to hear it 37 times before you really like.
So I used to oversimplify things and kind of bury the lead, so to speak, when I would be introducing this stuff to new people, and sometimes just kind of got to walk them through the introductory stuff in baby steps just to get them from here to there.
Wow. Yeah, because I think it's hard when something is so second nature to you to break it down for somebody who has no idea. Because sometimes I realize, like, wait a minute, I probably do sound really nutty to some people. You know, you're just, and then if they think you're crazy, they're just going to tune you out, and they're not going to hear anything you have to say. But I think that I have been guilty in the past, way back, of somebody I know, one of my friends used to say that I wheelbarrow dumped things on people. So if somebody had a question, say about nutrition, because that's what my background is in, I would just dump a whole bunch of links on them, like, here, read these 50 articles about dietary fat or whatever. And he's like, Lisa, no. And like, not everybody wants, because I like to read. He's like, not everybody wants that. They just want you to break down the basic points. And I'm like, oh, okay. Sorry. Whoops.
Yeah, I used to do the same thing.
So sometimes, I think it's good intentions. You just want to share information and then not realize, like, overwhelming some people.
Sure.
Yeah, not everyone has the same need for information when it comes to, you know, things. Sometimes people don't need a whole lot of information to make up their mind, and sometimes people need to know, like, every particular angle about something before they can decide.
Right. I think the key is kind of figuring out that the person you're interacting with style.
Yeah.
What works for them. Maybe asking is a good thing.
Oh, that's complicated, though. So, Shane, it sounds like you've done, like, I don't know what to call it, like, libertarian outreach or something like that. Is that true?
Well, I guess
Well, because you said you were introducing people to the ideas, so... I guess I've never really done that, so I'm kind of curious.
Well, I have a way of just trying to relate any conversation I'm having with a random person to things like this. You know, I have a way of trying to steer the conversation in certain directions.
Okay.
So whether I'm at work or wherever, you know, with my real life friends and family, a lot of them know what I'm about. And so it's not like unusual to talk about those kind of things with me. Yeah. But when it comes to like new people at work or anywhere, I try to relate anything to liberty or, you know, at least, you know, free thinking or something.
Okay.
So I guess everything is, all interactions can be liberty outreach.
Sure. If you want them to be, yeah, I guess they can be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you using like mind ninja tricks on them? Sneak in this little subliminal message here.
I guess I can be a little bit of a social chameleon. And so, like, no matter who I'm talking to, I can kind of relate to them on some level and have something to talk about. So they think I'm one of them, you know?
That's good, though. I don't think that's a bad thing, as long as you use it for good and not evil.
Right.
So have you ever used it to pick up a chick?
Liberty outreach?
Yeah. Have you, like, you know, you're in the bar, you're chatting up the lady, you know, you start to steering it towards liberty. I don't know. You tell me how it goes.
Well, maybe not at the bar, but I guess I have used liberty outreach in that way also.
Cool. Good work.
So how does that go? Because, you know, I'm a single girl. I'm kind of curious. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because usually what happens with me is, see, I'm in Maryland, a predominantly Democrat state. So normally, let's say that guns come up and I say that I don't own any, but I'm all for gun ownership. You know, people should be able to protect themselves and their families. And a lot of times that alone shuts down the conversation. Wow. I've had people actually, men, get mad at me about that. No, nobody should own guns. They're made for killing. And I'm like, oh, whoops.
Whoops.
I guess it's different out here in Ohio.
Yeah. Maryland is special.
I was raised in Indiana where we learn to shoot when we're kids. So it's a little bit different.
Yeah, I don't know what's up with the state with that. That's a really big issue here. The state has very strict gun laws. Concealed carry is pretty much unheard of unless you have to present a very good reason. The state has to give you permission, and it's hard to get. It's not. I moved here from Virginia a few years ago. In Virginia, you can open carry without any kind of, you know, permission slip. Mm-hmm. So I came here and was like, okay.
All right.
So the attitude is just completely different. I never know. It's funny being like us, though, isn't it? You never know who you're going to relate to on certain things and who is going to...
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Get upset with what you say, yeah.
Like, I try to convert people all the time, and I run into Bernie's, like, back during the election and campaign. And so I would run into Bernie supporters and try to convert them. I'd run into Trump supporters and try to convert them, you know. Huh. So, like, it takes, like, a different, completely different approach depending on where the person's coming from. But basically, like, if there's someone on the left, you can kind of relate to them when it comes to social freedoms. And someone on the right can probably relate to economic freedom.
Right.
And then if you put the two together, you get just freedom, you know?
Yay.
Yes. Yay, freedom.
That's the best kind of freedom. The freedom.
Freedom is the best.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And there's a whole joke about libertarians and how we can tick off a leftist and a righty in the same conversation or in the same day.
Yeah, that's how you know you're doing it right, is when one person calls you a right-wing nut job and then the next guy calls you a commie liberal, so.
Worms!
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
And go on the sidebar of the Freedom Fiend site. We now have Amazon links for Amazon US, Amazon UK, and Amazon Canada due to popular demand. Worms.
segment of the night. We hope you've enjoyed your time with us this evening. And to wrap it up, we've got some redemption here in the third act. So, I'm not sure when this came out, possibly today, but apparently the Supreme Court, the people in the black dresses, declared their opinion, and that opinion has now become a force of law, and it states that the Lexmark printer restrictions on refilling are invalid. So this sets an interesting precedent in the sense that once you sell something, if you're a company, you sell an item, whatever that person does with that item from that point on is their business and none of yours. So just a brief history, Lexmark makes printers and ink cartridges and that sort of thing. And so they were selling ink cartridges with their brand name on it. And if you ran out of ink in those, you could take it to a third-party service and get them refilled. And Lexmark didn't like that third party doing that, so they sued them, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court, apparently. So we now have this decision in a 8-0 decision from the Supreme Court.
That's something. Wow.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
So you never know with the Supreme Court how they're going to go. So I don't know. I think in my opinion, this is a more liberty-leaning decision on their part. So I happen to applaud them because I already agree with it. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think it was a good decision, too. I really like the analogy that John Roberts made to buying a car, like an auto repair shop. How you can go to any of them once you own a car to get repairs and parts. And the original company doesn't have any control over that.
Yeah, that is a great example of... Yeah, people do this sort of thing all the time with, like, you know, the little coffee cup makers. The same situation happened there. They were trying to stop people from using different cups. They could only use the official branded cup. And so,
I remember that for the one cup coffee machines. Right. I do remember because all these other brands started coming out with them. And there was a big debate.
Tractor companies were suing clients because they were putting different software on the tractors than the tractor company wanted. So, this actually comes up quite a bit in modern society. So now that it's a Supreme Court precedent, I don't know. There you go. Redemption in the third act.
There you go. Yeah, that's impressive. We actually agree with them for once. This will give me hope that things are heading in the right direction, and then tomorrow something horrible will happen to take away all good.
Well, a broken clock is right twice a day.
So. Right.
Yeah.
I, for one, am against industry standards. Or, I mean, I'm for industry standards, but I'm against intellectual property, you know, being the way to enforce that.
I would agree.
Yeah, me too. Imagine that. We all agree. Imagine, see, there's that consistency I was talking about earlier.
So this would be a significant step away from intellectual property, I think.
Definitely. So
who knows what we could see in the future.
Yeah, and this article that we're reading from Fortune, we'll link to it in the show notes. But let's see. It was mentioning that today's Lexmark ruling amounts to yet another drubbing, which I'm not sure what that means.
I've never heard that word before.
I might be mispronouncing it, but anyway. It's a drubbing for the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals, which has been frequently criticized for rulings that expand the rights of intellectual property owners. So, in my vague knowledge on this topic, the Federal Circuit Court of Appeals is like a special court in D.C. that mainly handles intellectual property type stuff. And so now, you know, this article is just pointing out that maybe there's a trend in reversing the expansion of intellectual property rights from that court. So, pretty cool.
It is pretty cool.
Worms.
Worms.
Worms. So many worms. Great show, guys. I had fun.
Yeah.
Fun
too.
Nice
music. Join us again next time on the Freedom Fiends.